Welcome to the Everyday Journey podcast. As always, I'm your host, Vasily Mazin, coming at you from Brooklyn, New York. On this program, I interview people who are outstanding in their field of activity, casting a spotlight on one character at a time. My guest today is a global mental health advocate, an entrepreneur, and a third culture kid. And she gave a TEDx talk, read over 400 books on psychology, and I guess other subjects as well, and owned multiple businesses. I present to you Christine Chen. Hello, thank you for connecting all the way from Los Angeles.
Of course, anytime.
So you are the first female guest on my show. That's a big day.
Oh, it's a pleasure. That's wonderful.
So I listened to a couple of interviews you gave, and the TEDx talk, your claim to fame. The subject was third culture kids.
Well, yes.
And what it's like to be one. I will include the link in the show notes. And my first question to you is, where are you from?
Ooh, that's a great question.
I'm laughing because I'm trying to show that there's a smiley emoji after this question. Where are you from?
Oh, that's a great question, which I think more and more people are having a hard time answering because our world is getting more and more global. So to first answer where I am from, I'm culturally from Taiwan, but I moved around. This is my fifth country. So where I am from, to be honest, I belong everywhere and at the same time nowhere. I view myself as a chameleon and adapting everywhere I go. So where I am is where I am right now in the present. And yes.
Okay, so this is the kind of answer you would give to a stranger.
To a stranger.
And they would be like, what? Can you just say one thing?
Oh my goodness. No, the thing is, like, I'm sure if you have audiences who can relate, my face is pretty universal. So wherever I go, whichever continent, I look like the people there. And so sometimes they're like, oh, you're from Latin America. Oh, you're from here. You're from here. So people, I just let people guess. And it's always a fun thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So let's list the countries where you actually spend time.
Long
time.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so a big part of my culture is the Philippines. This is where the happy side of me comes out. When I get sad, I tap into the Filipino joy, the Jollibee side. So that's that. Taiwan, of course. So that is my culture when I'm with my family. The culture of respect, culture of respecting elders, being academically inclined. So does the Taiwanese side. And of course, there's also China. It's very similar to Taiwan, but different. I think China is more of the business aggression side, where you don't really have time to relax. You just hustle. And that is really the power of Chinese culture, hard work. Of course, France, very dear to my heart. France, the culture of aesthetics, of beauty, of art, of love for pastries. So there's France. And of course, the United States, the home of kombucha and LA Fitness.
I'm not sure if it's true, but the word kombucha was definitely popularized here. Actually, as a kid, I've experienced a bunch of kombucha making not in my home, but my friend's parents or grandparents would make a 3-liter jar, you know, of kombucha.
Oh,
as we called it, the tea mushroom.
Oh, so good. You had 3 liters of those.
Yeah, those are the best.
Oh, my goodness.
Right now, actually, I have a couple of, I would say they're like 1.5 liter jars. Yeah, so I make it at home, but that's a little bit off topic. We'll have a kombucha episode separately.
Okay.
Cool. That's quite a few countries that you consider your homes at different parts and different times of your life. And
yes,
maybe in the future, whenever you go to any of those places, you'll feel at home instantly, right?
For sure.
And so let's explain to our listeners, what is a third culture kid and What is it about?
Okay, so third culture, if you look at the research, I'll give the formal and my definition of what a third culture is. So the formal definition is basically a person who was brought up in a country that's different from your parents' culture. So let's say your listener is Japanese, but his parents are American. Technically, the third culture is the culture of being foreign, that state of being international. That is the third culture. It's not specifically a culture like China or Japan. That third culture that we're talking about is that feeling of camaraderie when you meet people who are like global nomads, international people. You have a different language. That is the third culture. It's just like the startup culture. Third culture is like that kind of subculture, right? So that's the formal definition. My definition of a third culture kid is if you are someone, you don't have to spend much time in other countries, but if you're someone who holds different cultures in your heart, let's say you're brought up in America, but you love, love, love Japanese culture. And for you, you don't feel American because you have so much love for Japan. That for me, you are a global citizen. You are a third culture kid. So for me, third culture kids are kids who hold different places dearly in your heart. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you for that. I also thought that it would be fair to explain it in addition by the say occurrence in life where two parents, let's say, meet in Japan. She is Japanese and he is Canadian, and they move to France together, and their child is born there. So he's a half and half in the new country that is 100%. His home country, and then he goes to live in the United States. And that would be like a very extreme case of a third culture kid, right?
For sure, and that absolutely counts. So, for the book that I'm releasing next week, next year, because it's almost a new year. So I've interviewed over 30 third culture kids, and there are some kids who were brought up exactly like that, biracial, and brought up in different countries, and they feel so lost. So, absolutely, that's you are a third culture kid.
Do people like that, when they meet and they have completely different backgrounds from each other, do they relate to each other much easier, even though they're from different cultures?
Yes. So studies have shown that third culture kids, that's why you can relate more with each other, because you speak a common language of not fitting in one culture. So you tend to get along more. So this is why places like hostels, places like the airport, the international community, these are the people that third culture kids usually get along more.
Nice. About your book, have you come up with a title yet?
Right. It's a secret. still coming up with a few. But one of the things that one of the titles I'll share with you that I really, it's on top, it's called Hermit. You know, a hermit crab changes shell, but his essence is still the same. And that for me is what encapsulates a third culture kid. You can change shell everywhere you go.
I would guess you probably decided on the subtitle by now. No?
Yes, subtitle. Yeah, Psychology of Third Culture Kids.
Looking forward to that.
Of course.
That's an interesting subject. I am a little bit of that myself. Plus, I meet people like that pretty often. And yeah, I would definitely point out that it's easier to connect with people like that, because there's less sort of silly misunderstandings about, like, why can't you just be from this one place, you know? Mm-hmm. Because I grew up for a fair part of my life in Russia, speaking Russian, and being an ethnic Russian. So for a long time, I didn't know what it would be like. And then I come to the States and I connect with a bunch of people. I assimilate. And my best friends are first generation Americans. You know, they can be Americans. You know, they're like fully like with the culture and all, but their parents speak a different language. Maybe they have two parents that speak different languages and stuff like that.
Wow. Yeah, definitely. You're a third culture kid, right? And the thing with third culture, if I may add, is there is no in-group or out-group. We are, in a way, very open. like the essence of a third culture. It's unfortunate we have to put a cap on it, but if really words do not exist, if words were not to exist, third culture kids is just everyone who has different cultures and places in your heart. So definitely.
Okay, so let's talk about your experience in different places. Just out of curiosity, let's say about the Philippines to start. Do you speak Tagalog?
Yes. Ah, super. Hello, magandang umaga. I love Filipino. It's really, I love the Philippines so much. It is what made me, in a way, experience true joy and happiness. Let me give you a story. So there was one time a few years ago, so in entrepreneurship, we started a social enterprise. So I had to live in the rural parts of the Philippines. And these people were what you would classify in America as poor, like really poor. Like literally, they don't have flushes. At night, the lights are like blinking. The water is not flowing well. Very, very agriculturally poor. But let me tell you, these group of people are the happiest people I've ever met in my life. And being a third culture kid, getting to experience not just a different culture, but a different economic background, opened my eyes, because it dispels all the myth that you need money to be happy. Happiness is a choice. That's what I learned in the Philippines. It's a choice. It's a celebration. And so, yeah, that's the Philippines.
I've been to the Philippines once, and I've experienced this firsthand. I've been to some poor parts, and the only poor environment where I felt a little bit uneasy was in Manila, but elsewhere, people were just friendly, accommodating, happy. They would try their jokes on me, you know, very cute.
Yeah, they're very cute. And Manila can be chaotic. It is.
And they were kind enough to, a couple times I visited, I saw inside people's houses, very humble places, like essentially like a half a garage, you know, sometimes they would live like in something like that. I was in Pampanga, for example. Very, very, very poor. Anyway, that's a different story. So I guess cultural acceptance in the Philippines is extremely easy. Would you say it's the easiest of all the places you've been?
Yes, and Taiwan, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Taiwan is also easygoing.
Very easygoing. And they speak English. So, yeah.
In the Philippines, not in Taiwan.
In Taiwan, too, in Taipei.
In Taiwan, too. Taipei, okay, cool. I'm looking forward. I'm planning a visit in the spring.
It's the best for food.
So let's compare your experience in France. It was a different age. Let's talk about what France is like culturally, acceptance-wise, language-wise.
So I would love to talk about some of the hassles of being a third culture kid, definitely, especially when you don't speak the language. I'm sure you can relate. So I went to France speaking only bonjour, right, during that time. And so I couldn't even pronounce my home name. So I literally went there and I couldn't find my place because I couldn't pronounce my address. So that's my first foray to France. And then I went into the bank and then I wanted to apply for a bank account. And that banker is the angriest person I've ever seen in my life. I'm like, do you want my money or not? So, and he
always would try in English though, right? With that person.
But he's like you speak French, you speak my language, right? Mm-hmm. But over time, I've grown to love France. Like it's very big part of me because it taught me how to appreciate the present moment. So one thing I noticed in France, which is very different from the United States, if there is something like, let's say, a fireworks show, or let's say even just a Disney show, right? People in the U.S. will tend to get their phones out and take pictures. In France, no one takes pictures. Like, they stay present, and they just watch. And that, for me, is a very big culture shock of just staying in the present.
Very different from the Asian stereotypes about, let's say, Japanese tourists, or now Chinese tourists I see, they cannot leave the house without a camera if they're visiting somewhere. I'm not sure how it goes. Well, I think even in their homes, you know, they always want to film the moment, right? If it's something joyful, there's always something to film. And 100%. You're saying that the French people are culturally sort of opposed to it. Not opposed to it, they're just not trying to save it on a medium. They just want to savor it, right? They just want to enjoy it.
Yes. Yes, just being present.
Beautiful how it all ties in to being present. So are you into meditation?
Yes, very much. So, I can share. So I trained under a Buddhist monk in Taipei. And that literally changed my life.
Tell me a little bit about that.
Okay, so you don't think about going to meditate when life is good, right? So during that time, but of course, that is very important to meditate daily. But during that time, the reason I got into it was because something tragic happened in my family. And for me, I wanted to cope in a healthy way. So I went to the temple, and there were weekly sessions. So the biggest lesson I learned from the Buddhist monk is the ability to release not only your mental state but also your physical state, the ability to observe yourself and see, where are you tense today? Are your shoulders up? Are your hands closed? You know, are your feet tense? Being able to notice your body and releasing your body to release the mind, that for me was mind-blowing. And it changed my life. Yeah.
I'm perceiving your words as directions for me right now. I'm like, oh, are my shoulders up? Like, I should bring them down. How are my feet? Yeah, it's good. It's good to check up on yourself.
For sure.
Whenever, several times a day. And to see where you are. So you learned about that. It helped you cope. You managed to overcome your grief, I suppose.
Yes, not overcome per se. Overcome and accept at the same time, very great word, accept. You got it, yeah.
Good. So that was a subject that came to mind unplanned. But to continue we'll tie in into a later topic.
Right? Okay.
To continue with the cultural sort of stripes of your life. Now you are in the USA, in Los Angeles. What stands out compared to your previous experiences living elsewhere? What are the upsides? What are some of the shortcomings possibly you noticed here?
Okay, you can perhaps relate to a lot of what I'm going to say because you also moved here from Russia.
That's right.
So definitely. So pros. It's my first time to see people wearing slippers in formal settings. Like, it is so laid back to a fault.
Yeah.
Just the other day, can I just say, I saw someone wearing a Star Wars costume in a coffee shop and no one cared. So for me, that's the pro of America. You know, no one cares. Like, it's
you cared a little bit. If it got stuck in your memory, that it made an impression on you.
It did make an impression on me. And I mean, if this happened in China, you would be caught, right? They'll think something's wrong with you. But in America, that's totally fine. So that's the pro. You can be anyone you want to be. You have the choice to be anyone you want to be. The con is definitely being away from your family. It's a sacrifice that I had to make. Not being there during the pivotal growth moments of my brother, not being there watching my parents age, not being there to sing a simple happy birthday to my father on his birthday. That, I think, is the con, like being far away from, the people who matter to you. Yeah.
Yeah. Being in California specifically is challenging geographically because it's not the most convenient location to visit remote parts of the world.
For sure.
And yes, that I can relate to as well. I missed a bunch of family things being far away. I also used to live in Los Angeles and San Francisco. Mm-hmm. It's great places for people to visit. They were and mm-hmm. are to visit me when I'm there. Like mm-hmm. my brother, my mom, my cousin, they all enjoyed it very much. But it's so far away. The trips are exhausting.
It is.
But for the time being, you are planning to live in the United States.
Yes, and I am not planning to move anytime soon. I think I caught a travel fatigue. I'm just going to stay here.
Mm-hmm.
But travel who fatigue. Knows?
Yeah, that's right? An interesting subject as well. Because I've been traveling myself very intensely, like... For like 11 months, I never had a place where I would stay longer than 4 weeks at a time. that includes being back in the States for the last 5 months, where even inside New York, I changed 4 places.
I can relate. So, I moved 3 times here. Just in LA, yeah, alone. So, I can relate.
So now I have a base. Let's see for how long, but I have my stuff. I'm in my bedroom now with my bed and my stuff. I still have some stuff in the storage, but anyway, we are situated. But I think the travel spirit never truly comes down. There's
never.
Once you open this Pandora's box, you can't stop.
100%.
So let's. The reason why you're in the States is the big part of it is that you are getting education in mental health. What is it exactly that you're studying, and how did you arrive to this profession?
For sure. So I'm currently doing psychology, and psychology is a very broad field, right? And my specific topic of interest is on the relationship between humans and computer. So how does social media affect our mental state? And at the same time, the reverse, how does our personality, how does our habits influence how we use social media? So that's my biggest topic, aside from third culture kids. It's media and mental health. So, yeah.
Media and mental health. So let's talk about some interesting aspects of it, the effects of social media on people. So I think Instagram is dominating right now. We all love it for obvious reasons. Well, I wouldn't speak for everybody, but a lot of people seem to want to connect on Instagram these days over phone mm-hmm. numbers, Facebook, even definitely not Snapchat. So what's happening? Why are people so fixated on Instagram, on the photo feed, and on liking, and all that kind of stuff?
Right. So let me answer it in two folds. First, your question, and then I'll add on the relationship between tech and humans. So your first question mm-hmm. is basically, why are people so attracted to it? Okay, so there are a lot of reasons. First is these apps are designed to hit you with dopamine. So dopamine is a reward, it's your reward system, basically. So it's like, in real life, it's like getting a candy. So each like that you receive or each reply that you receive a hit of dopamine. And that is addicting, right? So addiction to social media and everything is very much like addiction to food. You don't know why you're addicted to it, but it's slowly infiltrating your system, right? So that's the neuroscience behind it. And another reason is because it's becoming normal, as you said. If everyone is on social, you don't want to be the only one hiding under a rock, right? So social media is not all bad. It makes people money. It connects people. And so the reason you're on it, you should not feel guilty for it, because it's really normal. It's our way of communicating nowadays. So the fact that it's very social makes it addicting too. And so that goes to my second point on the relationship between social media and tech. We're hearing a lot of people blaming technology. right? Oh yeah, like technology makes you anxious, la la la. And I'm sure you've heard of these things, right? But what we're seeing right now, and we're writing a paper on it actually, is that your personality matters more. If you are the type of person in real life, let's say without tech, you easily get jealous. You're the type who stalks your girlfriend's posts. You're the type who just gets jealous all the time. So if you go on social media, that actually aggravates it, right? So you become more, more agitated. But you, if you are the type who, let's say you have a great support system around you, you don't really compare that much, you have self-worth, you're very strong, you know who you are, social media is actually a great way for you to connect with people. So ultimately, social media is not bad. It's all about who you are, your values, and yeah. But, okay, I have to add a third point. So there's another piece to it, which is there's two camps in social media versus and humans. The first camp, it's the human's responsibility. And the second camp, which I'm going to talk to you about, is about the fact that the medium changes the brain. So what does that mean? Are you ready for this?
Keep me.
Okay. Have you noticed your attention span for reading a book is like literally like a snail now? Like you can't finish a book.
Yeah. Four pages a day.
four pages. Can you imagine? Have you ever wondered why this is happening? So there are some
because I would guess. Let me guess that my dopamine appetite has increased.
That's one of it, definitely. But that, and if you notice, a lot of the newspapers right now, they're actually adapting to the way UX is to like how websites are designed. Print is adapting to media. Why is that? Because social media and UX and technology is affecting our attention spans in a way that the way it's designed is meant not for deep thinking. It's meant for bite-sized information. And so if you are exposed to this kind of learning for a prolonged period of time, your brain is now more used to bite-sized tweets, images. So if today you're faced with a book, your brain is not used to it. It's like it's an alien. The way you use computer, our phones, it's actually shaping our brains as we use it.
I see. So is there any tips for people who think that they may be are too addicted to it, that their life is a bit out of control because of this? Like, what can people do to consider themselves healthy users of social media?
For sure. See, addiction for internet use is still a blurred line. As of today, 2019, there's no common term yet. But the first thing to note is to ask yourself just one simple question. Is your academic or your work life getting affected already? If not, it's fine. But if it is, and if people around you are saying, you just keep staring at your phone, you're not talking to me, you're not present. Let's say you go on a date and your girlfriend's like, you're not talking to me. Then, you know, you have a problem, right? Then you get to start asking yourself, what can I do? Am I really overusing it? So just being aware and asking yourself that question, is it already affecting me? Yeah. So that's the first question you have to ask.
Are you in favor of sort of self-policing in the society when, in a good way, hopefully, where, you know, when someone takes out their phone at dinner, that all others say, you know, would say to this person, like, hey, put your phone down, you know, like, that's not polite. Or, like, parents will tell their children, okay, enough of that. Because I noticed, like, say, when I was in Thailand, I noticed there's no control. Like, parents would happily give a device to the children just so that they would leave them alone. Friends go out to cafes and bars and spend time on their phones without shame. So I noticed in the States there's a little bit more of this sort of moderation that is sort of enforced by your peers. You know, people will shame you a little bit for using your phone too much, not paying attention to them. So, and for me, like, I automatically I get self-conscious when I'm around people using my phone, because my hand just reaches for the phone. I want to look at it, even if it's about something in context. For example, we could touch on some topic, and I was like, let me get some more details on that. Let me get my phone and look at it. Even then, I think some people may be like, well, we don't have to check all the facts. You know, we can just keep talking. So what do you think about that? Like, should we help each other with that?
You said it in such a great way. Should we help each other? Definitely. Because really, if you look at it, the using of phones, whether it's a kid giving it to a child or just between you and me, we're talking, is when you're using your phone instead of talking to the person in front of you, what you're communicating to that person is, you are so boring that my phone is more interesting than you. So I think it's a great way to self-police and to tell each other, look, you mean something to me. I want to connect with you. Do you mind if we spend this time together and we talk undistracted? I want to connect with you. Say it. Say what you need. If you don't want to connect, of course you wouldn't care if the person, let's say you're on a bad date, you would gladly let the other, like, let the girl scroll Instagram because you're bored, right? You're like, go for it. But if this person means so much to you and she's using her phone, you'd be hurt, right? So communicate clearly to each other, whether with your friends or with your family. I really treasure our time together. I hope we get to connect in person deeply. So yeah, definitely.
So what are your plans once you graduate in terms of professional career? Like, how are you going to try to help people with their mental issues?
This is such a great question. There are so many ways. 2020 is planned out. So aside from the book, which is really a big passion of mine to help third culture kids, I'm also launching something new next year. So my way of communicating is through business. So workshops and products coming up related to mental health and media use at a global scale. So definitely my way moving forward is through business.
When you say mental health, are we talking about people who have psychological problems from birth, or you work with this kind of people, or also would you say that everyone to a certain extent has some kind of a mental health issue that they could address? And also, finally, are there people out there who don't have any significant mental health issues? Is it impossible to be fully healthy mentally?
For sure. You know, I'm still growing in the process as we are talking. I'm still looking at which group I'm most passionate about, to be honest with you. But at the moment, I'm still very much focused on media and how it relates to the person. And if there were really, if I were to narrow it down, it boils down to two things. I want to solve loneliness and I want to solve anxiety. Just these two things. Even for third culture kids, what I'm really solving is loneliness while traveling the world. For media, it's anxiety about not being good enough. So if we were to boil these two down, it's people who are lonely and people who are anxious. And I won't really go into, let's say, children, ADHD, autism. That is not my specialty. There are people better than me for that. So I won't touch on that.
So are there people who don't have any issues, who wouldn't need your help, do you think?
preventive mental health, definitely. But I really think everyone, not everyone, everyone should have a choice to know what's available, to know that being aware is an option, to be aware that, yeah, that you can be in control of your mental health. I think everyone deserves that choice. Yeah.
Maybe closer to the final minutes of our interview, could you give me and everyone else who is listening some tips on how to adjust your daily routine to be more aware and to be less sort of dependent on media.
Wow. Okay. So first is to be more aware, and second, not to be attached on media. Okay. So a lot of things. Awareness is, here's what I say, Buddhism, we know Buddhism. 1% of Buddhism is enlightenment. 99% is maintaining. The point I'm going to make is to be self-aware, you have to practice it every day. You have to build habits every single day. So personally for me, I meditate in the morning, affirmations, visualizations. And so I've been journaling now for 3 years, like consistently straight, daily. So maintaining your habits is very important to cultivate self-awareness. Number two, to cultivate self-awareness is also important to be aware of your energy levels when you're with different people. Because people, we don't live in void, right? So be aware, starting today, whenever you're around people, ask yourself, how do I feel around this person? Does this person add to my life or does he reduce from my life? So being aware of your environment is a very, very important part of self-awareness. And so those are the two tips that I can give to you. So first, again, is the habits part. And number two is be aware of your environment. Okay, on media use, so our phones right now, actually, you can set up on your iPhone to lock up your apps for certain times of the day. So really, just putting your phone away and setting your phone up in a way you can put it on grayscale, so it's black and white, just for you to not click on it. And again, if it's a habit, right? If you fail, it's okay. Start again the next day. Please do not self-sabotage. Just because you consumed Instagram 6 hours today doesn't mean you're a failure. It's okay, right? Start again tomorrow, you know, slowly go down. Don't be so harsh on yourself if you accidentally spent too much time on YouTube. It's okay, you're human, it's fine, right? So self-compassion towards yourself too, that's so important when you want to decrease your social media use. So yeah.
That's very good tips. I tried that myself along these lines. I try to remind myself that maybe I'm spending too much time on mindless social media apps where I get cases of FOMO here and there, and to use the words of the founder of Basecamp 37 Signals, it's not FOMO. You should have the joy of missing out, or JOMO. They call it JOMO.
Yes.
Like if you miss something, just celebrate that, because you've just saved yourself some time and some energy. Most likely whatever you thought was great was not so great, because it looks like that in pictures doesn't mean it was, and doesn't mean it was for you. And I have to remind myself that I don't need to catch up with whatever trends or whatever events my social circle is into just because it looks attractive on Instagram. Because, yeah,
right.
Time and time again, I experienced what they experienced there. And people tend to present their lives a lot more favorable light than they actually are. So yes, thank you for the reminders and the direction.
Of course. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'll just add slowly. I know we're about the end, but I love JOMO because fundamentally that means you love yourself enough that you don't care anymore. And I think that's the level that we all get to go to. To be able to love yourself so much that you create a home that you are happy to come home to. You create a you that you are happy to come home to the point that even if the whole world is having fun and you feel low, you know that you're safe within yourself.
That's great. I think it's a good place to wrap up. I will share your blog and your social media accounts. I don't know. What would you like to share for people to find more about you and your work?
Right. I'm on my website, christinechan.com. That's where I'm most active. You can also find me on Twitter. I'm getting more active there now. Instagram, I upload once a week, but really the best way to find me is through my website.
Thank you so much. I will try to catch you when I'm in LA next time. And I appreciate your time.
Yeah, thank you.